So you can all sit and meditate and listen to the Dhamma. So not many days, it will be the start of the monastic rains retreat. And so normally before the rains start, the monks will come to the monastery that they're trained at, and they will pay respects to their teacher. They will do this formal ceremony of asking for forgiveness and paying respects. And so on the 16th of June that passed, there was a meeting at Wat Nom Bapong, Ajahn Chah's old monastery. And then there was this tradition of paying respects after the meeting. So the monks would pay respects, bow to those senior to them. And then they would go off their separate ways to spend the rains at the various branch monasteries. And so for here, the monks who had trained here, who had studied here before in the early days of this monastery, they come together to show their gratitude and their respect to their teacher in line with the Dhamma in the Vinaya. And then they go off to the various places, whether in this country or overseas. And this is a beautiful tradition that has been passed down right from the time of the Buddha until the time of Nombapong in this present day. This is something which Venerable Ajahn Chah took his disciples to do. And he also taught these various aspects of etiquette and of the standards that have been passed down, and he continued that tradition. And these are a means of giving up our conceit, the conceit within the minds of the monastics, and teaching them to have this respect for their teachers and for one another. And so this is something which is really beautiful. And there's a comparison that can be made to like cleaning out our homes. And if we do that frequently, then our homes become beautiful. Or if there is a window which is covered with dust, but we clean that, and then we're able to see clearly through that window because it is now clean. We can see various images through it, like the windshield on our car, that if we clean that, then we're able to see all the things clearly outside of the car. So our minds are like this as well. And we have this method of asking forgiveness, paying respects, and this is something which is very gracious and beautiful. So it's something which gives energy to the mind. In order for this to be the case, in order for someone like Venerable Ajahn Chah to have so many disciples to come and to show their respects and to be his disciples, the one as the teacher really needs to have a lot of power, a lot of energy, a lot of barami. During his time, he had 500 or 600 monastic disciples that were his following. So we may have heard at the time of the Buddha, there were monks like Venerable Sariputta who had a retinue of 500 monks. And during the time of Venerable Ajahn Chah, that he had at least 500 monks. This is not easy at all. That it really requires for someone to have a lot of accumulated past merits and spiritual virtues. But Ajahn Chah, for himself, he would pay respects to Lumpur Ginri. His other teacher, Lumpur Tongrat, had passed away already. And so he would go to the Wat Kantasira Wat to pay respects to Lumpur Ginri. And Venerable Ajahn Chah, he would sit there in a very composed and respectful way and bow to his teacher, Lumpur Ginri. So he was both teaching his disciples and be an example for his disciples as well, of how to pay respects to their great teacher. So he taught his monastics, both the monks and the novices, to have an understanding in these fundamentals of the Dhamma in the Vinaya, these very beautiful teachings of the monks going and paying respects. So this is how it is in the meditative tradition. In the study tradition, that they also have the act of going to pay respects to the monks who are more senior up in the ecclesiastic hierarchy. And so the monk who is head of managing the province or the larger area. And so usually it's within 7 days before the rain retreat starts, the monks will go and pay respects. And so this is a form which was used that the Buddha taught that has been passed down to us. So during the Vasa, this rain retreat time, it's a chance for the monks to practice in a stricter way. There's the Tudanga practices, the ascetic practices, of which there are 13. And the ones which are possible to be practiced during the rains are, for example, to eat just one meal a day, just in one sitting, to eat all of the food just within one's own alms bowl, or to go an alms round and to only receive and eat the food that the lay people gave on alms round, to not eat any food which has been offered into the monastery, to not take food from the tables. And so whether the monks get a lot of food or a little bit, they eat just that, and just enough. If they get a lot of food, then they take some out and they share that with the others. And it's enough to be able to survive. Over in the northeast of Thailand, it could be quite hard sometimes. And going out on alms round, sometimes you get just one bowl of sticky rice and a little bit of chili sauce and maybe one dessert. Or sometimes you only get plain rice. But if one has practiced like this before, then it's something that one can carry on doing. And sometimes going out and just getting a tiny bit of food, just some rice, and sitting, looking at the bowl, a monk can have tears falling down because it's just so torturous just to eat like that. But even though it's torturous, even though there are tears, the heart is still. It's not scattered. It's not thinking and wondering, doubting about things. So these are the benefits of these ascetic practices that the monks can train in, and they can help our cultivation of our mind. Sometimes some monks determine to not speak, or to be one who, which means just to be one who speaks very little. So this requires its effort as well to be able to do that. And so to take up that determination of noble silence for 3 months. For others, they determine not to lie down for 3 months, and throughout the night time that they just do their walking and sitting meditation throughout the whole of the night, putting in this genuine, sincere effort. In terms of the study monks, that it's also an opportunity for them to be very sincere in their studies too, and learning how to translate from Pali language into Thai language, and from Thai into Pali. And this requires a lot of skill. It's an opportunity for them to develop their skill. And so what about for us then? So there's this competition that, say, the study monks can have, and in the meditative tradition it can be the same as well. And so there was, in the Buddha's time, there were 3 monks. And during the rains retreat, one of them made a determination that he wouldn't send his mind or his thoughts outside of the monastery. The second monk determined that he wouldn't send his mind or his thoughts outside of the dwelling that he was staying in, that he would just keep it there within his hut. And so that was a very strict way of practicing. And the third monk, he had great mindfulness and wisdom, and he determined that he wouldn't send his mind outside of his body, that he would have mindfulness in the body, in feelings, in the mind and the Dhamma throughout the whole of those 3 months. So this shows that he had great energy and great spiritual virtues, to the point of being able to reach arahantship. So then the question arises, can lay people train like this as well? Well, it is possible for lay people to do these, to train just like the monks. You can have respect to one another, and so you can show respect to your great teacher, and to have this act of asking for forgiveness as well, for the sake of purifying the mind, for the sake of relieving it from its obstacles, from the things which obstruct the mind from goodness. You can also see how the things in this world are just temporary things, because our life is something which is not sure. And so in this act of asking for forgiveness, paying respects, we're letting go of many things. So in training like this, that it's possible for the lay people to be able to take up these ascetic practices as well. And so like for a lay person, you can keep the 8 precepts on the one pra, the lunar observance day, which falls 1 day a week. On normal days, you can keep the 5 precepts. You can determine to go out and offer alms food every day. If you're not able to travel all the way to a forest monastery, then you can just offer to a monastery which is close by your home. You can determine to just have 2 meals a day. So these are things which lay people can practice. Lay people can train in this, to not be attached to the flavor of food. So we train to give rise to mindfulness and to be mindful within the body, within the feelings, and the mind and the Dhamma. And this is true too when you go to work, that you need to have mindfulness there as well, to be training your minds, to have kindness and compassion for one another. So we can give the comparison that like monks are like professional athletes, and the lay people are like the amateur athletes. But if those amateur athletes train and do this consistently, then it's very possible for them to become professionals, for them to become very skilled at what they do. And so therefore it really takes this practice, so the sitting in meditation and trying to do that each and every day. And if you do that, if you carry on with your practice, and then this happiness of heart can arise, this letting go can come up, and we can experience Nibbana and see the Dhamma. So having virtue, having samadhi, this collectedness of mind, a firm mind, having wisdom, that then we can contemplate the things that we are deluded by. This Sakaya Ditti, taking the body to be me, to belong to me. And so we can pull out all the things of this body and pull it apart. Pull out the teeth and pull out the bones and pull out the blood and the pus. And then we can ask each of these parts, are you me? So the teeth, we can ask each tooth, are you me? And they just are as they are. But if we have these nerves which are functioning, then we can experience feelings of pain, for instance. So there's that Vedana that comes up. But that tooth, it doesn't know that there is pain there. The bones aren't aware of any of this. None of the organs or the limbs are aware of any pain. There's change that they undergo, but they're not aware of that. But when there's functioning nerves, then feelings get sent through the mind. The mind becomes cognizant of these. And we feel like there's pain in the tooth. And so then we feel that that is my tooth. But if we pull that tooth out, there's no me there to it. So we train like this, contemplate like this. But we also need to train in samadhi as well. And this is even more important for the time of illness. Because if we have trained in samadhi as well, then we are able to meet with that illness. And so sometimes monks get very ill. But because they've practiced before, because they've done their walking meditation, sitting meditation before, then when they, and they've taken up these practices of like not lying down at night, then when they become ill, they're still able to practice, they're still able to do their walking meditation. They're still able to train their minds, to train in sitting meditation, to bring brightness into the heart. And so when there's sickness, there is some deterioration that happens, but we shouldn't allow everything to deteriorate. We should, though there is some of this deterioration, we should also be developing other things as well. And so how can one do this? Well, it's because of the training that they have done, because of the barami that they have created. And when we have created this good karma and barami in the past, then we receive the results of that in the present moment. So we need to put in our efforts, because we don't know what we're going to meet with in the future. But dukkha, suffering, is there in front of us. So we train to contemplate the body. Perhaps we have doubts in the Buddha, or the Dhamma, or the Sangha. But this body, it's never been a self. So if we can see that, then we won't have any doubts. There's nothing there to doubt about. And then we'll be able to see and feel the goodness in the Buddha and the Dhamma and the Sangha. We'll have a belief in karma because we've seen that clearly for ourselves in our own minds. So we practice for the sake of Magga, Pala, Nibbana, the paths, the fruitions, and Nibbana. We keep our precepts for Magga, Pala, Nibbana. We're generous, we meditate in order to free ourselves from suffering. And so this then is the Nibbana which happens within our hearts. And this is something which lay people are able to achieve as well. Because keeping the five precepts, one is able to become a Sotapanna, a stream enterer. We're able to see the Dhamma without difficulty. But we have to contemplate. We have to practice consistently. So another comparison is that the Dhamma is like medicine, which is able to cure our heart's suffering. So it's medicine for the heart. We know about normal medicine already and how this is able to cure the illnesses of the body. But for the mind, that depends, relies upon the Dhamma in order to look after it and cure it. So therefore, as lay people, you should put your efforts into your meditation, into your training. And then one day, this barami will arise. And if that barami really comes together and it's very powerful, then that is incredible. There were some monks who took up the ascetic practices, and they went to stay out deep in the forest up on a hill. And they determined that they wouldn't speak, they wouldn't make any sound, they wouldn't cry out. And this took a lot of samadhi, that they had great samadhi to be able to do this, no matter what painful feelings they were feeling, that they wouldn't make a sound. So there were 30 monks staying there, and there was also a tiger staying there. And one by one, the tiger took a monk off to eat. But none of these monks cried out, even though there were such strong feelings that they had, these painful feelings, that they put up a fight with those. They had this great energy. They're able to get into jhana, into these mental absorptions. Their samadhi was very high. And they're able to separate their mind out from the feelings, contemplate that these are not me. And each of these monks, one by one, attained to arahantship until all 30 of them were fully awakened. So they had this great samadhi that they were able to achieve that. So even though there was these painful feelings there, but they didn't allow those painful feelings to damage their hearts, and they were all able to experience full awakening. So therefore we should try to train, try to build up our minds to be sincere in this. We've traveled here, some from close by, some from far away, to practice in the monastery. And there's over 50 people who've had the opportunity to practice like this. And so this is the sincerity that you will have to develop your mind, to raise it to a higher state, following the path of practice of Venerable Ajahn Mun, Venerable Ajahn Chah, to experience Nibbana in your hearts. Because as soon as you let go, you experience Nibbana right there. Whatever, when we attach, then there's suffering right there. But if we're able to pull out that attachment, then we experience a temporary Nibbana. So we can see that there is this happiness, this contentment, a fullness of heart when we experience that. So this, therefore, we know that this is the path that can take us to awakening, that can take us to a clear understanding. That we gain a home for our hearts, which is this firm samadhi. As wisdom arises, as both mindfulness and wisdom, and these are qualities that we need to train ourselves in to give rise to. We can't afford to just follow our old karma, our own habits, and just allow ourselves to go along with that. We need to train to be chanting every day. On the lunar observance day, we do more chanting, we do more meditation than usual. Because we see that time is always passing by. But if we don't give rise to goodness, then we gain nothing from this world. All that happens is the earth goes from darkness to brightness to darkness to brightness, back and forth. The days carry on passing by, but there's no goodness that we create. There's no benefit. Our lives give rise to no benefit. And so there's nothing there within our lives which develops our hearts. So therefore may you be intent. May you really practice well, practice strictly, following these teachings. In line, following the example of the monastics, so in line with the energy that you have within your own hearts as well. So when you go back home, then you can carry on with your practice and carry on practicing well. And keep on doing this until you get to the point where you see the Dhamma of the Buddha. So may you all do that. May you all see the Dhamma, know the Dhamma. May you have long life, beauty, happiness, and strength. And may you grow in blessings.